welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. A Jaybird.
Steve, I haven't seen you in
four minutes.
It's been 4 minutes. We have a special guest with us tonight. Fresh off the boat.
Hands together.
Yay. Hello, everybody.
A big yee yee.
Jim Stewart from the Muskie Shop.
The
Toot Screamer. How's everybody doing?
They can't, Jim, you can't hear them. Don't ask them questions.
That's true. I'm a total rookie, man.
One guy just yelled at his car stereo. I'm great, Jim. Thanks for asking.
They're all like, who's this jackwagon? Oh.
Anyway, man, we are recording live from the illustrious Muskie Shop Studios here in Minocqua, Wisconsin, getting ready for the bash. We have the Muskie Shop Bash coming up in a matter of days. It's Saturday, so what, 7 days? We're a day late on the podcast. I was in the car, okay? I'm not going to podcast from the parking lot of a Holiday Inn. But anyway, we got the bash coming up. Jay, what is it? What are some of the vendors? What are some of the stuff we're seeing for the bash coming up?
Well, on the spot. Let me grab my list. We are in the office right now, Steve.
Look at this.
Jay's control room.
Okay. Jay's out of control room.
Here we go, folks. Are you ready?
This is just some of the
vendors that are going to be there displaying their awesome products.
There's a thing of strawberry cheesecake donuts in Jay's control room. So
that was a gift from Tom's son Caleb. Who's 10 years old?
11.
Caleb was now 11 years old, and he said, Jay, what would you like to eat for breakfast? And I said, Caleb, I'm fine. He's like, it's on me. So anyway, he brought back some donuts, and anyway,
great story,
nice
bro.
One. Yeah, sorry. Are you ready for this? Are you sitting down?
Who's? Yes, I'm literally sitting in your chair.
Yep. Hooked on Muskie Baits.
Boom.
Shimano.
Shimanus.
Daiwa
Ria.
Livingston Lures.
That's the company with the beak boops.
Yeah. Yep. And Joe Bucher Outdoors.
Yeah.
Huh?
Uh-huh.
There you go. The Smitties, a.k.a. Smitty Tackle.
There you go.
B&N, maker of fine crankbaits from...
like Talon. Is it the... Yeah, that's the B&N Talon. Yeah, those are cool.
Yeah, very cool stuff. Josh from Wreck and Rack.
Nice.
He'll be displaying his gear.
Ooh.
Bill from Slammer Tackle.
Nice.
The owner and designer of... finest crankbaits. Yeah.
Very good job, Jay.
Full chaos tackle display.
Ooh.
Meps is coming up.
Meeps.
Lakewood with all their tackle boxes.
Mm-hmm.
New stuff. Violent Strike Lures. Violence. Figure 8 Lures. Whale Tail. Muskies Inc. is going to be represented there.
Nice.
Sportsman's Repair, which is a local...
Talk into the microphone, sir.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Sportsman's Repair. I mean, they do everything from reel repair to trolling motors, right?
Yeah. Steve and I both are running some Garmins on our boats, and Jim Solberg down there at Sportsman's Repair set my boat up. Man, he is really good with electronics and trolling motors and anything. He's going to bring his new boat up, and he's going to show folks how to rig it and how to run their electronics.
Oh, cool.
Wiring the whole kit and caboodle.
Everything.
Yeah,
he's
cool.
Really, really good and really easy to talk to, and he doesn't speak over your head or anything. He's really good. So he's going to be here.
Oh,
and
sweet.
It'll be a great addition for the show.
There'll be some more surprises, too. There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of vendors coming.
One thing I'm excited about, and we just sort of got confirmation, the planer boards that our dude from Minnesota has been working on. He's bringing a batch of those, which will be here, which is, you know, the blade. Those are going to be here. Goodness, big surprise, as you say, Jay. The Smitties will be doing interpretive dance. It'll be...
And some cooking.
Outdoor, yeah. Bring an appetite.
With Jake and Russ.
If you want to come up and have a Smitty wiener at the bash, they'll be serving them up fresh. Anyway, one thing to tell you. If you guys were at the bash last year, you know, tons of people come out to this thing. If you're coming out and you got your boat in tow, if you can leave it at your camp, do so. I mean, if you can't leave it anywhere, you can definitely park it here. There's the Lynn's Auto parking lot and all that stuff. But if you can save space just for the morning there for the bash, please try to do so. But anyway, we've been fishing. Believe it or not, we've been on the water, the Tube Screamer, and Jay and I, and just, you know, illustrious cast of guests we have on the boat as we go. tearing them up. So it feels like, guys, it feels like we're right back where we were last year, doesn't it?
The same patterns are working, which is awesome. We're running the same lake temps, although we're starting a little bit earlier than we did last year.
Yeah, a little bit earlier. Yeah.
A little bit earlier, but so we got 2.5 weeks to try some different things out, and started out great. You got a really nice one yesterday, Steve.
Yeah, got a
little 4-hour trip. Yeah,
yeah.
And we went out today, and how long did we end up fishing? 6 hours?
Yeah, four.
Four in the boat, and the tube screamer here to my left. Hold a hat trick.
Whoop.
Shoot the tube.
Yeah, it was a fun day, man.
That was a big one. That was a big fish. I'm sure Jay will put it out, and you'll see it in an episode of the show. But, yeah, Jim got a real nice one. What's crazy is, like, you heard me talk about last year, if you're fishing up north, doing something different and fishing different. Today was probably the most conceptually different approach to Northwoods fishing I've ever been a part of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Where we fished a body of water completely devoid of weeds. Pelagic bait schools. I'm not saying pelagic like in the tule, but literally all the bait schools are offshore. They're not related to anything other structure. And we structure fished all day long, and Jim just nailed a beast, you know, which was neat, which is, regardless if you're fishing the cover, where there's no weeds, you don't have to have the weeds if you're fishing the right breaks, you know, and relating to that. So that was bizarre. But, you know, back for the, you know, just the tip, just the thing we've been harping on last year, which is rubber presentations, right? Water Wolf putting fish in the boat, right? Tubes putting fish in the boat. That's probably one of the neater presentations with the Water Wolf of... just the hang time on it so much different than a lot of other baits, you know, where it's got a lot more belly roll. It's got the top fin on the back, which is just an underutilized bait because it's not a bulldog replacement. It's not a Medusa replacement, sort of its own thing. That's been doing it. And then we talked last year, tubes. And Jim, what'd you get yours on today?
You're never going to believe this, but it was a tube.
On a tube. The tube screamer produces on a tube in a shocking twist.
Yeah.
He produces a shocking on new a color, tube. Too.
Yeah, so that's all. There's actually, it's funny. We have the Tube Screamer collar now. Jim has his own tube color.
None of which was my doing, but that's all right.
Oh, it doesn't matter. You can't get out of this. Sorry. You've got the Tube Screamer collar going there. So that's cool. I mean, if you guys are coming up and fishing around the Bash, a lot of people are. They're going to fish on their way up, the way out. You know, I think the biggest takeaway is what we're sort of always preaching, do something different, which is outside edges, which is structural elements, which is fishing deeper than everybody else. Jim, what did the guy say to you today that we ran into? You're fishing what? Way deeper.
Yep. The guy that has a resort on the lake, he was out on a pontoon, and he's seen where we were fishing. He's like, holy cow, you guys are way deeper than I normally am.
Mm-hmm.
Steve was just, you knew where you were following the bait, and...
yeah, just following
you
the
you were running the boat, but man, you had us on fish, that's
well,
for sure.
Well, and that was the thing for us of a new body of water, to be honest with you, but probably the takeaway would be, you know, a willingness to go, it's not a shallow bite quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after about an hour and a half, went, okay, let's do something different. Let's get on the structure. We're not seeing the shoreline cover, the weed beds that typify the North Woods.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at all. Weren't seeing it. Yeah, nothing up shallow.
You know, and so it doesn't have to be that there's always a shallow fish per se, because if the body of water really is not conducive to it, it's not going to be the case. And that was just reiterated the point in my mind of, you know, we could have sat on this body of water and pounded the edges to her blue in the face and done nothing, but you go change it up, make an assessment of what's going on. The bait is at 10 to 15 feet. Well, guess where the muskies are?
Pretty close by.
I mean, the thing is, they're close by. Yeah. I would say probably that the thing that had caught my attention is like where we're casting, we were not even a cast off the edge. We were following that deeper break, you know, sort of the contact point where it broke into the main basin. And post-frontal conditions, high bright sun, very, very, very minimal winds.
You know, light variable too, which is usually the kiss of death.
And getting down there and putting it in their face, you know, and it's sort of that adage of, you know, anybody can catch them when they're hot. That's always been the thought process. But that willingness to do something that, again, we were getting looks, dude. You know, both of you know that. Like, people were driving by us going, these guys don't know anything.
Yep.
Like, when other boats go by, they're like, something's wrong with those guys. But that willingness to do something different, because, I mean, it put fish in. I mean, you can't argue with a four fish day.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, in you know, mid-40s fish, Northwoods, I'll take it. But so, if you guys are up for the bash, be, you know, willing to, if we hit those bad conditions, be willing to get off those edges, doing something different, fishing deeper. You know, you might forego that hot fish that's up high, that bucktail, that topwater fish, but there are other fish, especially in those tough conditions. So that's always an interesting take, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was awesome, man. It was a fun day. It really was.
All right, guys. Well, we have been slaving over a hot musky boat all day long. We got the bash. If you can imagine how much stuff we got up our sleeves, all the travel, all the angst that is the musky world here. We're recording, as Jim pointed out. We have some microphones on top of tackle boxes. This is how it rolls. This is the illustrious world of musky fishing here, folks.
Big time.
It's hard to keep up with all the ladies outside the studio bitch beating on the door.
So, see you later, guys.
Yeah, I'm out of here. Anyway, we got some Q&A we're going to get through, guys. And then next week, what you're going to hear the live Musky 360 podcast from the Bash, which is always a hoot. And we're going to have a big holler there. But first up, Mike, what size rod do you recommend for a youth angler? I have two sons that are in their late teens. Should we go with 8 foot, 8.6s, or 9s? What sort of makes sense for the long haul? What do you guys think?
In their late teens?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, no sense going with a small, childlike size in.
What, as far as like length? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it depends
go
on
eight,
height.
Six or
like,
nine.
Like we always say, like, I mean, if your kids are like 4'2", it might be an issue. I don't know.
Yeah, if they're smaller kids, that's one thing, but. Yeah, I guess I'd go with an 8.5.
I think it sounds like he's going action. For what? I don't want to buy more than one rod in a while. I mean,
that's
eight,
the thing with buying.
Yeah, 8.5, yeah, 9.
If you start thinking youth, and then, like you said, you're going to end up replacing it sooner than later and spending more money. If you buy the right thing to start off, you might be better set doing that. Therefore, go with a proper rod length, which is minimum 8.6.
It's like how Jay's parents bought his shoes. You know, he might wear a size 7.
Kept growing out of them,
Steve. Let's buy him 12.
Took a while, but I got there.
16 years later, he grew into them, folks. Look how much money they saved. No, I would say, I mean, depending on height. And it depends how high of a, I mean, if you guys are fishing out of like a Pete Maina's Campion where you're 19 feet off the water, you might be a longer rod. But just find a rod that's appropriate for the height gun of your boat and for their height. And then usually that's going to be the 8.6 or the 9 foot range in general. The next up is Davis. How do you guys run planer boards and what brands do you recommend? Well, it couldn't be better timed. The blade from Josh Hackensmith out of Minnesota, that's going to be a good one. Available at the Muskie Shop Bash. Which is the weirdest planer board ever. Jim, you're a big planer board runner. What sort of, how do you run your boards when you're running them and why?
Well, I don't know if I'm a big planer board runner, but the ones, when I use them, I guess I like the offshores. They're all, the yellow birds are good. You know, I guess I'm just comfortable with the offshores. They're real easy to manage and easy when you're bringing your bait in or a fish in, they can clip it off real quick and it's easy to manage. Doesn't take rocket science, just a little bit of practice, and you can be really efficient at boards. I mean, the guys that are down on Green Bay and that kind of stuff,
yeah,
they're way over my head. You know, up here, it's just, you know, one or two lines or maybe three or something. But, you know, they're pretty easy. The offshores and the yellowbirds are quite simple to use. So, what I use.
It's funny. In a conversation I had earlier this week with a buddy of mine up here, was talking about boards, and they go, well, we're in a one per state, right? Like, we did a trawling pass today, and it was, we had to check on our phones real quick, and it was one per max three, right?
Correct.
So we did a trolling pass, and we had three out. But, you know, why would a guy up north in the North Woods ever run planer boards? And I was looking at him, because I was telling him about the blade, the new one that's coming out. And
yeah.
I said, listen, I said, if it's dicey because old Steve Areno about ate the big one on a rock bar today that came out of nowhere. We were trolling some headlocks, and it's not marked on the map. It was actually, the map was pretty far off as to what was accurate. And we came up on it pretty shallow. We went from 18 to 4 feet, and the map said 18 to 18 feet, but there's, you know, 12-foot difference of what was marked. But had we wanted to hit that, that might have been a good opportunity to run a planer board out of one side.
Yeah.
Right? It's not always about the spread. Like you talk about the Green Bay guys where it's like, okay, we need to run 47 lines here. Let's get as many of them in the water as we can. But it's an underutilized thing, I think. If you're trolling something that's nasty, like a rock bar, and you're like, man, I don't want to really risk the lower unit or dinging the boat.
Yeah.
That you could put a board out there to the side and get that bait away from the boat for better boat control. So it's sort of been my opinion. So,
yep.
You know, it's like, not, like you said, it doesn't take a rocket genius.
Yep.
You don't have to have, you know, the mind of Musky Thunder here to be able to do this. Speaking of, Jay, how much have you had today? What's the official Musky Thunder drink count of Jay Essie is brought to you by Lynn's Auto. Jay, how many Musky Thunders have you had today?
Full six pack, Steve.
You sound more like Ricky Bobo than you do Jay right there. He is tweaking and geeking, folks.
He will not sleep tonight.
He has had, listen, me and Jim are actually, this might be Jay's last podcast. We've talked about it. He's eaten nothing but strawberry cheesecake donuts and drank Musky Thunder now for, 2 weeks?
He's twitching.
48 hours, Steve.
48 hours of donut eating and Musky Thunder. Jay has not slept in 3 days.
I kept screaming, get the net out.
You were in a BP. Yeah.
We weren't even on the water at the time.
You were at the sea store. Get the net! And that's why Jay's not allowed at Fleet Farm.
Yeah, I got kicked out.
That's a low moment in any man's life when you get kicked out of the Fleet Farm.
Yeah, they still let me in Menards, though.
Mm-hmm.
One more quick nugget on the planer board. So as I was with Doug Smith and Timmy Ives, they guide for us. And I watched Doug one day. I was in his boat, and he put the planer board out. And then he worked this deep edge. It was late in the fall, and he ran that bait, the boat's away from the edge, but he ran his bait right along the edge for a long ways. We didn't get anything that day, but I know he's been very successful. And Tim does some trolling, and they're both really good at that. They'll stick it out there. Some guys will even run a sucker real slow with their planer board out there and just working it around an island or some sort of
something
a piece of structure.
Dicey,
yeah. So those guys are really good at it.
And you know, you say that, and like it doesn't even have to be a hero. I mean, like if you're like a Lake of the Woods or dude, I've done it on Eagle where I'm like, I would like to troll that reef. However, I'm 88% certain I don't know where every rock is, but this is going to make it 100% certain I don't hit it. Like I said, it's just an application you can try there. So,
yeah,
you know, however you skin the cat. All right, let me keep going here. All right, Mitchell, what's your opinion on bucktail makers right now as far as stagger blades and bucktails that are handmade? Does it differ from your typical, he's naming names here, I'm not going to compare and contrast, but, you know, basically are they better or worse? I don't think there's a better and worse in bucktail. I think it's a quality thing, you know, as far as like you're going to get maybe you can't name product lines per se, but okay. So compare, like, let's take a big maker versus like Christian at Hooked On, right? So we all like Christian, and he makes very, very, like, his stuff's like to the T perfection. You know what I'm saying? And that's probably the difference thing I would say with like a mass manufactured bucktail versus sort of the boutique-y. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But there's some of them, like, and I'm picking on Christian because we love Christian, which is like he makes boutique-y bucktails, but they're not boutique-y price,
right?
You know, and another one I'd say, this is like a high, what I would consider to be a budget-friendly high-end bucktail, is a Spanky, right? So you can't compare apples to oranges or this versus like somebody that's doing a bunch. But, you know, if you're looking for an option there, I like Hooked On, like Spanky's. The big craze right now is the stagger stuff. Everybody's talking about stagger. And that's an interesting thing. So Christian made me like the 8-9, I think. What's it called, Jim? I can't ever remember.
The bomb.
He's got like the bomb and E-Wolf. The stagger stuff.
Yep.
And so that's an interesting look there if you're looking for boutique-y bucktails without the boutique-y price is the Hooked On Musky Bait. And they're, like I said, it's handmade quality where you're sort of getting it. But, you know, as far as a comparison, I think bucktails really boil down to application. You know, how that bait's going to run where, you know, it's not apples and oranges. But that's worth looking at. All right. Okay, Hunter is up next. What crankbaits do you feel work the best in heavy cover, Jay? What do you think? Crankbaits and heavy cover. What's making sense for you?
What crankbaits work best in heavy cover?
Mm-hmm.
Flat lip stuff. Mm-hmm. They seem to have a little bit better deflection quality.
Like flat? Are you talking like a coffin lip or like a flat lip?
Square lip? Square build?
Yeah.
One way to put it. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff out there that offers that. It would be a matter of, I mean, you know, the age-old, even Depth Raiders, which is a really deep depth-achieving crankbait, mm-hmm. can be used very effectively. They're actually really good, too. I mean, you know, most of these are going to have a downward angle point. They have natural deflection. If you know when you make contact, how to let off, let that thing back up. Mm-hmm. You know, contacts everything sometimes, especially when you're in that situation with whether it's timber or if you got some great weeds that are firm, it's easy to bounce off those things too. It really is. Even with baits with three treble hooks.
Well,
I mean, the Titan, I threw the Titan, you know, when we started out today,
right.
I was working that quite a bit. And, you know, actually, I'll take that back. That was yesterday when we were on a weedy situation lake.
Mm-hmm.
And remarkably weedless. I'm really happy with the way that thing slides through. So
well, it's not a crankbait. Crankbaits, Jay. Guy didn't need a Titan commercial, but I appreciate it. Thank you very much. The fine folks at Livingston Lures would like to thank Jay for the plug of the week. Brought to you by bleep, 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 bleep sounds and LivingstonLures.com. Crankbaits, Jay. Crankbaits. My brain quickly goes, and I said coffin lip, and you're right there, the square bills. And like what you're, I think what you're saying with the Titan is how it protects its, the front of the bait protects it. But like the coffin lips, what is the, Jay, you're the big fork master here. What's his deeper running crankbait? It's got a coffin lip on Avatar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So the Avatar.
You're talking about that. It's semi. It's flat, but it's also got the angles at the side. That's
right.
A coffin.
That's
okay.
A coffin lip. At least that's what they call them.
Yeah. That's the Avatar.
Avatar. Anything that seems to be like runs nose down. I know what you're saying with the Titan because the Titan pulls into the weeds and comes out.
It's got a square lip too.
Right.
It's the same. Really, the same principle. So.
Right.
Yeah.
But,
a lot of slammers have square lips.
Mm-hmm.
Cranes.
Cranes. And they. And it seems
classic weed bait.
Seems to give you a little less snaggy issue.
Yeah, there's like, something about it. Yeah, there's something about the...
Now, it, you know, and we're assuming, though, like with him saying, you know, whether it be a weedless thing, but it's also too, it could be a timber thing where those nose down, the nose forward presentation is going to give you a little bit more deflection. It really just boils down to deflecting off of the cover or the it bounces off the bait.
And, of course, high buoyancy is going to help you in that situation,
yeah,
too. So, you know, if it's something it has a real slow rise to it or is kind of neutral,
mm-hmm.
It wouldn't be the best call. I'd look for something really buoyant. You know, the crane baits we mentioned. I think we've still got some left, Jim, don't we, from that rare shipment we got in. most of those have, well, I think all of them have square lips, and they're made mm-hmm. of balsa wood. You don't get any more buoyant than that. And,
mm-hmm.
Slammers, shallow raiders, Lungeon 22, the short square.
Yep.
That's
those
a classic.
Stuff.
Yeah, there's endless choices, really.
I think the right call is understanding what you're throwing in. I know that sounds like a pawning it off, but you're not going to take, say, a Cisco Kid and throw it into 4-foot weeds and come out clean.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're throwing like Jim said, like a shallow raider, you can get it down and touch the weed top. It depends on how much you want to penetrate into that weed top, too, which there becomes, and I'm circling back to Jay because I was just busting at him, which is like at a certain point you go, well, if it's weeds, you might want to go dive and rise. You might want to go tighten or suic where you're actually just plunging into it and coming out pretty clean, too. So just a school of thought. So I think that the snaggier, the worse it is, the bigger the lips, and just running them shallow will work. Larry. Perfect timing here. How do you tune a suic? Ooh. That is a good question. So probably one of the most read articles I've ever written on was how to tune a suic, which if you guys haven't listened to that, all the podcasts is why I came up with the Titan. But tuning a suic, it really, and Jim, don't be afraid to chime in. I think it boils down to the two elements of tail and nose, right?
Right.
Which is getting the right angle. I'd say the first thing I want to do on a suic, I want to turn that bad boy upside down and want to look at the hook hangers, right? Sight them in. Those hook hangers need to be dead nuts onto each other. Like if one hook hanger's a little bit to the left, you need to bend him.
Perfect straight line.
Perfect straight line down the middle of the bait. First and foremost, right?
Yep.
Right.
Some of the old suics, it depends on if you got an old one or a new one. They've been through a few different configurations, but you know, it might be a cotter key, it might be a screw in. Just make sure those two guys are straight off the bat. As far as tuning, and I'm not talking about depth, but I'm talking about getting it to run straight and true, is tweaking that nose. So if that guy's pulling hard to the right, you need to turn that pin, the connector screw, to the left and vice versa, right? So you're going to counteract the which way it's pulling that's not good by turning the opposite direction, right? And you sort of find the perfect place on that, which it's small increments, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Very, yeah, this is yours, Jim.
No, either, on, yeah. Either
just, yeah, very small increments. And, you know, sometimes, you know, adding a split ring to that front of that suic sometimes is going to
alleviate a little bit.
It might take away some of the pain in trying to get it perfect, you know?
Right. You got to get it in the ballpark. I would say this is like with the screw in. On the suic, you don't have a lot of operating room on it. So it's like you can't put like a Super 7 in it. You know, like the big Super 7. But like you said, a thinner ring contact, it's a contact point thing. But, you know, if you're pulling right, go left. If you're pulling left, go right in small movements.
Same with the tail, Steve. A lot of people go overboard with that, and that'll cause you more problems than it's worth, really. Be really careful with the tail.
Well, in the tail for me, it's like if you overbend the tail down, now it's dragging, right?
Correct.
So if the tail is bent, if the tail is at like a hard, acute angle, now it's catching water, and it's not helping you dive. Small movements, small. And that would be the bare bone basics, I would say. You can get into bending one corner of the tail or bending the other corner of the tail, but aligning the, again, quick recap here, align the bottom screws. Your hook hangers need to be perfectly straight. Small movements, the addition of a split ring on the nose, and then bend the tail slightly. That would be, you know, the starting point. This is going to be a super short one, guys, because we have been slamming and jam. We got to be on the water again in the morning early. Connor asks, live bait during the summer. What do you guys think? Do you do it? Do you apply it? And does it work? Ooh. Jim, you brought that up earlier today about the Smitties.
Yeah. We were talking about that, Jim.
Yeah.
Tell that story. Yep. About Ross.
Smitty was telling us one time
that he speared a muskie every month of the year.
Oh, no.
Sorry, Jake. We love you.
We love you guys, Smitties. No, Russ, one year he did a little thing where he took a sucker along and he kind of did a little personal study and he caught a muskie on a sucker 12 months, all 12 months. And they work. So the theory is muskies are always going to hit them. They like them. They're going to eat them. However, in the warmer months when the air temperature is hot and the water temperature's warmer, hot, it's hard to keep them alive.
Yeah.
So if you can manage them and it don't become into a babysitting issue where you're babysitting that sucker and you're slowing you down, That's kind of what happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. If you can manage things right, keep them alive and use them at the proper times, they're always going to hit them. It's just a matter of managing them right and keeping them alive, and you're not turning into a sucker babysitter where you're, you know, you're always constantly worried about that thing, and then you're just defeating while you're out there.
Well, that's the thing, is like, there's a handful, and you guys always keep just a handful at the shop.
Yep.
And that water's what, 40, 50?
Yeah, it's coming straight out of the, you know, deep well, and it's cold water, and then you get them out into, you know, 75 degree lake, and it's like you plop them in, and it's like, dead. Yep.
I think what you're saying is like, that's like bringing a goldfish home. You got to acclimate him or something.
Correct.
You know?
Yep.
So I think that's the issue there with live bait of just, you can't just walk into the muskie shop, buy a sucker, strap it up, and just go drop it over the side of the boat in the middle of summer.
Yeah, it does take some management, some thought behind it. They will work, but you just gotta think about what you're doing.
Let me ask you this, because it's not, you know, maybe not the most popular thing, but you know, people want to catch fish. Are there hardier live baits? Like the bigger minnows, you know what I'm saying? Or like a chubby...
Jobs or something, yeah, right.
Like... Yeah. It's an option.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like we carry a pike mix, and there's some bigger ones in there that in theory you could use for pike or a muskie.
Are they more forgiving on temperature?
They are. They're definitely more forgiving on temperature versus a big sucker. So for sure, yeah, that'd be an option for somebody to use a bigger, you know, some of the bigger pike mix versus a 10, 12 inch 14-inch sucker.
Right. It's going to be, like you said, babysitting. But my thing would be this is like, it almost is like that live bait, obviously, live bait will always work because guess what muskies eat in the real world? Live bait.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know? But it becomes a matter of like, I think for a lot of it is it's slowing you down.
Yeah.
You can't drag it too fast. You can't cover water. I mean, suckers are bad enough in the winter, much less I can't even imagine in the heat. Like, you know, you got it. Once you get him in the water and he's alive, if you pull him out once, it's probably the end of the story, you know? So
yeah.
I think that's the reason it doesn't happen so much. It's
correct.
Just simply, it's not that it's not effective. It's just not conducive to the methodology, which is like,
you know, a sucker could be alive, but if it's not frisky doing its thing out there, your effectiveness just went down, right down, yeah, right, you know, the toilet.
It down there one time, and it just, yeah. So I think that's what you don't hear so much about. But, yeah, if you can pull it off, I mean, again, you'd have to acclimate or acclimatize that thing. But, I mean, it'll work. I mean, probably I'd say the best bet, I'm just riffing here, would be catching the live bait on where you're fishing. You know what I'm saying? Like, that would be the thing. I mean,
it's legal in a lot of areas.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they obviously, you know, to the guy's question, is it effective? Absolutely. What do you think they eat? They're eating whatever's live there. So,
sure.
You know, you could always strap something up or let me put that in quotation marks, whatever you can legally strap up.
Yeah.
You know, don't take me wrong here. It's not like go grab whatever, but, you know, I think the reason it's just not traditionally done this summer is just the pain in the keister from it. But anyway, guys, we're going to wrap her here. We do have, again, the Muskie Shop Bash 7 days out. Obviously, a bunch of people going to be out there. Going to do the power panel. So Booker's going to be there. If you don't know that, Maine is going to be there. Herbeck, the Smitties, all those vendors you heard. It will be a heck of a time. We're doing hot dogs and hamburgers, I believe, or just hot dogs. I don't know.
I think just hot dogs.
We're doing something.
Massive giveaways, too. We've got some giveaway packages that are going to blow your mind.
Massive.
And Elmer's going to be there, guys.
And Elmer's going to have his own table.
We forgot.
Good one, Jim. Holy smokes. We almost forgot to talk about the table of fame.
So anyway.
I thought we were going to say the table of Elmer.
I just made that up. I'm not sure.
Folks, Elmer Jensen, we are going to have the first and only movie poster signing for the Quest for Titan.
Yep.
Elmer, the star of, I don't know how we got him. I think Jim put him on the work schedule, but through a lot of hoops, we are able to acquire Elmer Jensen, the star power of the Northwoods. We were able to get him lined up for the Muskie Shop Bass Show. Elmer Jensen will be there signing autographs, posters for the Quest for Titan. He'll be there.
He'll have a possum by. He'll have his skateboard.
Possibly the famous skateboard from the Quest for Titan.
His helmet. His space helmet.
So if you want to come out and view, actually, I'm talking film used props from some of the greatest Muskie parody movies ever made, which is a very narrow category here. But
still worth talking about.
If you're an Elmer Jensen fan, you are going to be in hog heaven. Elmer will be there because he's on the schedule. Anyway, guys, we're going to wrap it up. We got to get in the water again. Jay Bird, Tube Screamer, say goodnight.
Night, guys. Thanks.
Bye. Yeah.
Joey don't mind if he misses his train.